Welcome to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg on a Thursday, week 10.
June 1st. Hello, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Television. We all watch it, or I think most of us watch it in some form or another. Making sense of it seems harder and harder every year. We've got an endless stream of shows on a huge array of platforms. Who can keep track? Well, Melanie McFarlane can keep track. She's a television critic who will preview the summer season for us later in the hour. We're also going to talk about some of the larger trends in the medium.
Yeah, lots to talk about there. And we've got Chris Christie biographer Matt Katz in the studio with us. In a few minutes, we'll talk with him about the former governor's expected bid for the presidency. This is his second shot, if you don't remember. Why is he doing it? And what's his path to victory in an increasingly crowded field? Lots to talk about there. But first, we're going to dig into the news. Code Orange is not just a campaign slogan for Sherelle Parker, but it's an air quality advisory that was recently issued for our region because of wildfires all the way up in Nova Scotia, Canada. It's known for its coastal beauties, but there's now a record-breaking wildfire that has consumed 50,000 acres of land, Avi. It's unprecedented, and it's way above their average 12,000 acres wildfires for the region. 16,000 people had to be evacuated, and officials say that elderly, the very young, and those with respiratory conditions should limit outdoor activity under a Code Orange, which expired for our region yesterday. But, you know, I woke up this morning, and, you know, Alexa... Yeah. But telling me about this, be alert. There's, you know, air quality alert. And it, to me, it shows that we're so connected. We could even see the smoke in our region from that wildfire over the next few days.
It's remarkable. And it comes on the heels of a May here in Philadelphia that was the single driest May on record. That's according to the National Weather Service. So another weather extreme right here in our area. You don't really notice dry months as much, right? Because the lack of rain, unless you work in agriculture, doesn't really register as much as a lot of rain. But this was an extraordinary May from a weather perspective right here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it usually rains, I think, most years on Memorial Day, but we had a gorgeous Memorial Day.
Is that a factor? Is that
that's what I thought about.
Is that a Cherry Gregg anecdote?
Yeah, it is, because, you know, but I will say that as of 7 a.m. today, the air quality in Philadelphia is labeled acceptable, which is yellow, which is below orange. But still, I mean, you will likely see that smoke from Boston to Virginia.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Not acceptable, or at least not good, is teacher turnover. It's a huge problem. The research shows that teacher turnover really does affect student learning year to year. Here in Pennsylvania, there's a new Penn State study that finds teacher turnover is on the rise, which is sparking concerns of potential shortages for next school year. So the attrition rate, this is the percentage of people in the profession leaving it, at least here in Pennsylvania, 7.7%, which was the highest on record for this data set kept by Penn State. The data set, we should clarify, is only 10 years old, so it's a 10-year high, I suppose. But attrition is up in the teaching profession here in the state of Pennsylvania, and it's particularly high here in Philadelphia. That is partially because of the number of charter schools. Charter schools have always had higher teacher attrition rates than traditional public schools.
Yeah, and that number is 16% in Philly. Wow. Yeah. And Black, Hispanic, and male teachers are more likely to leave their positions. And I got to mention that an investigative report out of the Logan Center for Investigative Reporting at Temple caught my eye. A record number of kids in Philadelphia school district, they're chronically absent. That is, they're missing at least 10% of classes. That number of kids chronically absent, 46%, with kids in high school missing a median of about 2 dozen days of class or more. That's a lot of class they're missing. A lot of it is safety fears. A lot of the reasons, mental health, you know, aftermath of the pandemic. But that doesn't fare well for kids coming out of Philadelphia schools when you're losing large numbers of teachers, as well as kids missing class.
I will offer, I guess, a note of caution on this data, because I do think it's troubling and the trend is troubling. However, when this data set was first kept, this one here at Penn State, the teacher attrition rate was also just about 7.7%. Yeah. I think it was 7.5. These things can be cyclical, and the temptation is always to tie high teacher attrition to something happening at that moment. But sometimes it really just ties into larger macroeconomic trends about the labor market, opportunities perhaps outside of teaching that didn't exist in a tighter economy. And so sometimes it's not so much the stuff we assume. I mean, it can be, but it's not necessarily the stuff we assume. Sometimes it just is this larger cycle of more turnover, less turnover, more turnover, less turnover. We'll see. I mean, if we have another 10 years of this data, we'll know more, obviously. Yeah. But it's something certainly to keep our eyes on.
For sure. And we're going to shift a little bit, play a little music.
Gather around this table, boys. You bring your shame, I lose my voice. Screaming at the gods.
That is the voice of Zach Bryan, a Navy veteran born in Japan who grew up in Oklahoma, who now lives in, guess where? Philadelphia.
I could have guessed that.
Yeah, he's a country music, you know, superstar. Can you believe that?
Yeah, he lives in Philadelphia. Did a couple shows at the Wells Fargo Center this week. I think the last one was last night. And sold out the Wells Fargo Center twice. So Zach Bryan, very big deal. And apparently, I just learned this, lives in Philadelphia, not in one of the big major music metros, here in Philly. So first of all, Zach Bryan, welcome to Philadelphia if you are listening.
Come to Studio 2.
Yes, we extended invitation to you to play a couple tunes here at Studio 2 anytime. That's an open invitation. 3, Nashville, watch your back. Philadelphia is coming.
we are the soon-to-be
country capital of the world.
And my response to this, Avi, is that, you know, Philly, we don't have a lot of celebrities living here.
We do.
All we have is athletes, and then they call people on the radio celebrities, which we're totally not. But it's just like, it's nice to have another bona fide celeb living here in Philly. I kind of want to pop my collar
because
of Philadelphia. Yeah.
Hey, we're attractive to rising country stars. And I have
Philly
to say,
sexy.
I have to say, I wasn't super familiar with Zach Bryan's music before this week.
Good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's actually, even if I would say this to people who don't listen to country music habitually, it sounds a little different. It's a little more stripped down. It reminds me a bit of Jason Isbell, if people know that name. It's like really singer-songwriter-y, kind of, it's melodic. It kind of takes you away.
Yeah.
I was super impressed by this
guy's music, like, is good music.
Period.
So there you go. So
good politics, bad politics. Chris Christie, let's pivot now.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk to Matt Katz, WNYC reporter and author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Matt Katz, welcome to Studio 2.
Oh, thanks so much, guys. Great to be here.
So we're talking to you.
Yeah.
Because we like you, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But also because Chris Christie is going to run for president. First, remind us, for folks who've lost track, what has Chris Christie been up to since he was governor of New Jersey? What's he been doing the last 5 years?
Yeah, he's been making money. He was had a paid commentating gig on ABC News, so he was on every Sunday. He was consulting and lobbying during the Trump years, taking advantage of his access to the White House then. I mean, he had a gig consulting for the fiscal authority in Puerto Rico. He was helping out businessmen in trouble with the Department of Justice. He had this firm that he set up, basically him and a couple of old associates, and he was collecting cash and preparing to figuring out how he could possibly one day run for president again.
So let's talk about this would-be campaign, because word on the street is going to drop on Tuesday.
Correct.
Coming.
Yep.
Tell us what the setup is and sort of the logic behind his decision to run for president this time.
Sure. We're told he's going to announce on Tuesday at a town hall meeting in New Hampshire. Town halls are his format. That's his environment. He's spectacular as a political communicator in those. You know, he's got the people around, like a kind of a theater in the round setting. He tells jokes. He engages with people. He likes the little back and forth fight with a heckler. He's great in those situations. So that's where he's going to announce on Tuesday in New Hampshire, first primary in the country. And his path, who knows, man?
Yeah.
I mean, it is an extremely crowded field. Trump dominates it, and he's quite unpopular, Christie is, among Republican voters. A poll came out this week showing he had the highest negatives of any other potential candidate in the field. But he sees himself as the most effective anti-Trump candidate in the field. So what he's going to do if he gets on the debate stage, and that's no guarantee, but if he's able to get on the debate stage, he's going to destroy Trump like a heat-seeking missile. And that's what that's going to be his whole shtick. And he hopes that works. And if it doesn't, I think he hopes he gets a consolation prize if somebody else other than Trump gets the nomination and wins the White House. And like VP or Attorney General.
So that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
The why, right? So
right.
Maybe he has convinced himself that he can win the nomination. But let's imagine that he's thinking about this a little bit more practically. What are sort of the next steps from a quote-unquote good showing in
right.
this run?
Well, first of all, in America today, it's never a bad idea to run for president. Because it's a good...
It's a platform, yeah.
It's
yeah.
a platform.
People
it keeps you relevant.
You. Yeah.
You get speaking gigs. You can get consulting gigs. You stay in the conversation. You keep on as a paid media person on ABC News or whatever. So it's never a bad idea. Based on the way we run elections in this country. And second of all, you know, if somebody like a Nikki Haley gets a nomination and wins the White House, and maybe they got along on the campaign trail, you could see somebody like a Nikki Haley making Chris Christie Attorney General. That's a job other than president Chris Christie has always wanted.
Yeah.
He's qualified on paper. He was a U.S. attorney in New Jersey. He would see also being AG as a platform to run for president. He once said that once you run for president and think you can get there, and imagine being in the White House, you can never shake it.
Mm. Yeah.
And I thought that was a kind of an honest view of the thing. And I think that's what's going on. I think he can't shake it.
And you started to allude, he has some political strengths. Let's talk about some of his strengths. And also,
yeah.
like, who are his friends? Because he has that pack called Tell It Like It Is,
yeah.
which kind of caught my eye. And so what are some of the political strengths he has running?
Yeah,
like
I mean, the political yeah. strengths is that he is extremely effective talker and communicator. I mean, anybody in a town hall meeting, and I saw him operate in many town hall meetings in New Jersey, New Hampshire, around the country. I mean, people fall in love with him. He's like extremely charming. People in New Hampshire and Iowa are not aware of his many scandals back in New Jersey,
right.
Or they That's forgot strange. About them at this point, like the bridge and the bridge gate
uh-huh.
scandal, which I years ago talked about many times on WHYY. and his other strength is that if anybody's cool on is not warm on Trump anymore, if Republican voters are not like into Trump anymore for whatever reason, he seems like a guy who knows how to make that argument for why Trump shouldn't be in the White House again, because he's been, you know, sticking it to Trump more than any other Republican over the last few months. Of course, he was with Trump until the very end of his first term,
right.
and he helped him with debate prep, and he was the first establishment Republican to endorse his candidacy back after Chris Christie lost in 2016.
Yeah.
So he enabled Trump for many, many years. But maybe he thinks Republican voters who don't like Trump anymore will forgive him for that and see him as an alternative.
We have about a minute left, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay, there's been some speculation out there that either Chris Christie or the people backing Chris Christie are really sending him on like a political kamikaze mission to take down Trump. Like that is his purpose. He doesn't think he can win. They don't think he can win. He's in there to get on those debate stages and just ruin Trump. A, do you think that's possible? And B, do you think he has any chance of actually achieving that?
So the anecdote people who believe that point to is that in 2016, he got on the debate stage with Marco Rubio, and it was a kamikaze mission. He basically just made fun of Rubio, destroyed Rubio, and Rubio's candidacy was dead in the water after that. So I can't imagine that he's got, we know, one billionaire supporting him, the owner of the Mets, Steve Cohen, who's a good friend of his, supported him the first time. I can't imagine that people who are going to spend money on this campaign are just doing it to watch a kamikaze mission.
Yeah.
But I do think there is an element of his team that sees him as somebody who's going to try to really like save democracy by keeping Trump out of the White House.
Fascinating. He is Matt Katz. He literally wrote the book on Chris Christie. It's called American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Also a reporter for WNYC. Matt, thank you so much for joining us here on Studio 2.
My pleasure. Nice to see you guys.
It's been really great talking to you. And coming up, we're talking TV. From critics' top summer picks to the writer's strike and that crackdown on password sharing, what should we be watching right now? We got to figure this out. Call us and share what you're going to be watching. 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org.
'cause they won't understand the words that are pouring from your mouth.
You are listening to Studio 2 in Philadelphia. Welcome back. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're about to talk about TV. So, Avi, what are you watching?
Can I tell you what my recent obsession is?
What?
I don't know if I'm proud of this. It's a show called Maine Cabin Masters. It's on a network you've never heard of. I think it's called Magnolia.
Ooh.
And basically, these guys go around Maine fixing up people's little cabins, little vacation cabins.
Aww.
And it just makes me think about vacation. It's total escapist television.
That's
and
like
I love it.
TV.
It's like reality, but it's home and garden style reality where it's not really about the friction. It's more about, look at this bad thing and they made it into a good thing. And couldn't you imagine yourself living there? I love it.
That's good.
How about you? You're all about Succession, right?
Succession. And I've been catching up on Fear of the Walking Dead because I love zombies.
Okay.
So there you go. But there are so many shows and so many streaming services. It takes a lot of work to keep track of everything that's out there, you know. But with the summer coming, we're all hoping to get a little downtime. We're going to put up our feet. We're going to catch up on some great TV entertainment. So we have asked Salon TV critic Melanie McFarland to join us now and give us some great recommendations and a preview of summer shows. Welcome, Melanie. Thank you for joining us on Studio 2.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're also going to talk about that screenwriter's strike, now day 31, and what it could mean for upcoming seasons of various shows. So if you have questions about that or would like to tell us your favorite shows or your thoughts on TV in general, call us or email us. The number is 888-477-9499. The email address is studio2@whyy.org.
All right. So, Melanie, we are kicking off summer TV season. What typically does summer mean for networks and streaming generally, and how is this year different?
Well, you know, at this point, there's a blurring of what a season means. There's always going to be the classic TV season from an ad point of view, which means a season that runs from September till about May. That's the network model. However, we've always had many debuts that happen during the summer season. So there are essentially many summertime shows we've come to count on. So what that means is that, you know, for network, it's pretty much similar to the way it's looked in past, which is you're going to get, I think, the Bachelorette, you're going to get, you know, things like these different reality competitions that are on network TV. You usually have something like American Ninja Warrior, something like that.
Yeah.
And then on streaming, there are a number of shows that come back in the summer. And one of them that I think that people are looking forward to is The Bear. So we're going to get into different recommendations. But the thing that's great about summer is that there are a number of shows that get a chance to kind of stand out a little bit more in the field because there's not as much competition. So The Bear was a great story and example of that from last season. You had this show that came out on Hulu. It was promoted, it was very well reviewed. And yet, you know, a lot of times a show can be very well reviewed and not capture an audience right away. This is a show that really built steam. And people started watching it, and it built steam over months, well into fall, you know, well into winter, people were still discovering it. So we have the second season coming back. So shows like that are always kind of fun to watch because you get to watch people discover it. And if you follow social media, people are like, oh, I'm watching this for the first time. And there's a real community around it.
The Bear. I'm sorry to cut you off there, Melanie. It's a fantastic show. It's about a very intense work environment. It happens to be a restaurant and a kitchen. We're actually going to play a clip here. In this scene, the camera is pivoting around a kitchen full of chefs. It is quick and stressful, all filmed in one take. Season 2, by the way, set to premiere June 22nd. Let's hear a little bit of The Bear.
Ibra, make sandwiches. Don't stop making sandwiches.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to make three sections, okay? They're going to be wet, hot, and sweet, all right? I'm going to take green tape, make those sections. Louis,
yes,
I want you to get the sandwiches, put them in the corresponding sections.
Poppy. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yo, sweet, bag, Sharpie, label that please, chef.
Yes, chef.
Gina, fire every single chicken we have, please, okay?
Yes,
Richie,
chef.
Do you even know how to do fries?
Yes, I know we need them now.
Okay, Marcus, where are we on cakes?
Get in there.
And sorry about the bleeps. There are not many scenes without them in The Bear. But I want to, Melanie, I want to ask you, what stood out about this show last year?
Well, I mean, you played it. So here's one of the things that was so wonderful about this. It captures this job that I think many of us have had. No matter who you are in life, you have probably worked in the service industry. Yeah. This is a story about someone who was at, you know, the top of his game. He was in a Michelin-starred restaurant, and he left that behind to go home and continue the restaurant that his brother had that had opened, and this family business his brother was running until he died. And he wanted to implement the same rules as this five-star restaurant, you know, just in terms of running the kitchen, like in a way that's called the Brigade. And there's a great line in there that's hilarious. I'll let people discover it for themselves. But that particular, but that particular episode, the reason the one shot was so wonderful is that it captured this 20 minutes that was supposed to, that people were supposed to be preparing for the lunch shift, and everything goes wrong, and it's in real time. And it captures this whole idea of, you know, the service industry can be very stressful. Yeah. And especially, you know, if you have a team, you can have a lot of people who are working together really well, but sometimes odds can be overwhelming. And I think that's one of the things that this show captures. It's very funny. That particular episode is very stressful, but it earns that from the viewer. Yeah. Like that's the moment that you really, I think if you weren't already invested, you're very invested in this series. And it happens to be the episode before the finale, which I think was brilliant.
And let's go over some, because this is a very compelling story, just the storyline here. One of my favorite shows, which we're going to have to talk about shortly, is Succession. There's excellent writing there that I just love, and the characters are awful, but I just love them anyway. I want to talk about sort of what you look for in deciding what is a good show or what makes a good show.
Everybody has different qualifications of what makes a good show. And I think especially now, since we are dealing with such volume, that there can be a lot of shows that people become addicted to and just love that wouldn't necessarily pass the test of what makes a great show. I think when I look at something like The Bear, it is so different just in terms of the feeling. It's the setup is familiar, but there was something about it that stuck out in terms of the naturalistic performances, just in terms of the chemistry with the cast. There's something very special there, and the writing that and the filmmaking aspect of it. Those are the things that I look, something that kind of, it's a strange thing to say, like, when you know,
right.
but it, you know, it really, it sticks out with that. And I think Succession, you know, covers that as well. There's something very, there can be very cinematic shows that are mediocre, but when you have a show where everything is just running on, you know, running on full throttle in terms of the acting, the cinematography, the settings, everything, and the realism, you know, I think that's to me what makes a great show.
We are speaking with Melanie McFarlane, television critic for Salon and president of the Television Critics Association. If you want to add your voice to the conversation, give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email us, studio2@whyy.org. Comment here from Louise, who says, I like Reluctant Traveler with Eugene Levy. It's on Apple TV Plus. I'm going to use that actually as a trampoline into a question. I've never heard of that show. I've heard of Eugene Levy, of course, but I've never heard of that show. There are so many shows. As a critic, how do you decide what to sample and what to basically say, look, it might be good, but I'm just not even going to pretend to watch it? How do you sift through everything, even just to figure out what to watch and what to review?
Look, you know, to be honest, it's really just a gamble every single time. There are moments, there are many shows. I'd like to tell you that I've seen every single show that's on the air. To be honest, I've seen one episode of Reluctant Traveler, and I thought that it was very charming.
Yeah,
I mean, but,
I like it too.
You know, yeah. And so the thing is, like, there are many shows that we decide that, not we, it's not like we all sit in a room, although we do that twice a year, but but it's not like all of us decide we must, you know, we must review this show. I think some of the great things about the way that the wave of TV that we have today is that there are a lot of discoveries that you can make. And, you know, Reluctant Traveler is a great example of that. The thing about it is it's on Apple TV Plus, which a lot of folks...
Well, I think we just lost our critic, Melanie McFarlane. But maybe while we're waiting for...
Can we talk about Succession for a second?
Let's talk about Succession a little bit. And one thing that I wanted to talk about, first of all, is your love of Succession. Why do you like the show again?
Because the writing because the characters are just awfully awful. While we're working to get Melanie back...
But here's something that I find interesting, because I've never seen the show Succession.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear about it all the time. And the finale just happened. We're not going to spoiler anything here, folks.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe the number of people that watch is 2.9 million, which is, I mean, it's a lot of people, but it's not that many people for a big hit show. And I was kind of wondering, like, I guess that's where the bar is now for a hit show.
Yeah.
If you can capture a few million people's attention.
Where it used to be double-digit millions for, like, Game of Thrones and other shows coming from HBO back in the day. But there were a lot less choices. There were fewer streaming services. Everybody was sort of corded up on cable. Now you have cord cutters. You have all these different channels. And so that's what we're dealing with right now. And so I want to sort of tee this up. And this is the scene from Succession's finale. The Roy siblings, Roman, Shiv, and Kendall, have reunited at their mother's house in Barbados. And they've hatched a plan to keep the family business. Now, Kendall is talking here, played by Jeremy Strong. Take a listen.
Obviously, I want it to be me. I genuinely think anyone objectively would say, L.A., my profile, experience, position, desire, public pronouncements, it's me. If we want to hold on to this company, for us, for my kids, for yours, it's me.
First of all, that theme gives me an earworm. And of course, Kendall is saying he should be the CEO.
Okay, is that what's going on?
And there's all this vying between the Sibs, and they call them the Sibs, kind of like over who should be in charge. And Kendall he has all kinds of problems. They are all crazy, but, you know, that was their pitch. And this is such a great show.
But what's interesting to me about this show as well, even though I've never seen it, but I understand you have to really watch it in order. It's one of these serialized, big, grand, epic narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like every show is like that now. More and more, the big hits are these basically extended movies, right? Like, they're basically long, long, long movies. And it makes it a little hard for me as more of a amateur. I'm not a super serious TV watcher outside of sports. I can't hop in and out of these shows. And I kind of feel shut out from the zeitgeist a little bit.
Oh, Avi, you feel shut out. Come in. But
we do have Melanie back. Melanie McFarlane is back, Salon's TV critic. Melanie, can you hear us?
I can. Sorry about that.
Awesome. So we were talking in your absence about Succession. We played a clip. And I noted that only... 2.9 million people watched the final episode so far. I guess that number will grow a little bit.
I haven't watched
it.
Yes. Jerry hasn't watched it. But that is far fewer than watch, say, the finale of Game of Thrones, which was also an HBO show. And I was wondering if that number is indicative more of Succession itself or something about the fragmented nature of the TV audience now. Maybe it's a little of both. Can you help us parse that?
You've definitely hit on it when you said the fragmented nature of TV itself. And look, you're also looking at something where Game of Thrones was a worldwide licensed property. When you're talking about those numbers, you're talking about something where you had a series that lasted for much longer, for one thing, built over that time. You know, we're talking about a series that lasted for a decade, but also, you know, licensing. There were toys. It was a huge brand. Succession did not have that. But Succession, I think, is one of those that still stands the test of time in terms of it being a great show for its time. I think it's also very much a specifically American type of show. What I mean by that is that, you know, Game of Thrones is, you know, fantasy tends to have, especially high fantasy, tends to have more of a worldwide draw.
That's an interesting point.
Versus something like this, it's very specifically about, you know, an American media conglomerate and the family behind it and those dynamics.
Well,
so,
Yeah, I guess it's universal. Yeah, Dragons are universal.
Dragons are universal, yeah. Whereas like, TV moguls and an American system.
That makes sense.
So I wanted to talk about this because to me, the writing in Succession is so great. And the Writers Guild right now is on strike. Both Avi and I are members of SAG-AFTRA, and there's a vote pending right now on whether to authorize a strike as actors gear up to renegotiate certain contracts as well. Can you lay out some of the problems that writers, actors, and other folks are experiencing now that streaming has become so mainstream?
Yes, and we were seeing a little bit of this in the form of, there were times earlier in the pandemic where there were, different pay structures for actors who had movies that are appearing in theaters versus, starting up on streaming. That's a bit different. But what it fundamentally comes down to is that in the 2007-2008 strike, you had a situation where part of what the WGA strike, part of what they were striking for to nail down was receiving residuals from streaming and what that would mean. And although they got a couple of gains, it wasn't sufficient to really make sure that the streaming model of residuals, what actually matched what streaming achieves, which is an actor and writers, they get residuals based on ad sales from any kind of re-airing of an episode that they participate in terms of writing or starring. But, on streaming, a lot of these services don't have ads. So you can actually, if you look at a number of, social media feeds from different writers, then there are times when they say like, hey, I got my residual check, and you can look and you can see that it got 3 cents.
Wow.
Or something. So, so this is something where this time around, they're really trying to renegotiate that so that, because, writers and actors, these are industries, these are professions where people can go a long time between jobs. And so those residuals are really what pays the bills for those folks when they're not in a project. Or not working on a project. And another thing that they're also nailing down now is how much AI will play a role in their jobs. And that specifically is related to the idea is that, look, we didn't really nail down what we needed from streaming in the previous strike. Now we have another technology that's only at its, in its nascency right now.
Yeah.
So if we don't nail down, boundaries around that, then the battle's lost. Because once, AI, as many people are talking about right now, could possibly replace the roles of writers. Uh-huh. And, it's going to affect actors as well.
Yeah. And obviously, the big issues there are more important than whether I have something to watch. But from a viewer's perspective, we will start to feel the effect of this pretty soon, right?
So that depends. That's one of those things where I think that people can say who can save for some yeah. services. And I specifically say for streaming. But let's start with network. So at this point right now, we would be coming out of the upfronts. In fact, we are coming out of the upfronts. And this is where different networks announce to the, to advertisers what their fall schedules will be. And they start to pre-sell these slots. So we're looking at, for instance, ABC's fall TV schedule. If you look at it, it is mainly reality with some news and information programming, like What Would You Do? The only scripted item that's on there right now is reruns of Abbott Elementary on Wednesdays between 9 and 9:30.
Wow.
Well, that sounds pretty spare. Yeah.
It sounds very spare. Now, if you think about streaming, the general, and I've got to say again, no, in terms of from an outsider's point of view, in streaming, there's a lot more content stacked up. So they had to have a much deeper bench. Yeah. The fact is, nobody really knows. But then we also have to factor in like a service like Netflix, some of their biggest hits are international.
Yeah.
So the long answer is, in some respects, we're going to be feeling it right away. In others, in terms of streaming, it might take much longer.
Yeah. And if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Melanie McFarland, television critic for Salon and president of the Television Critics Association. If you want to chime in, The number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. So I feel like this is a good time right now to sort of go into the list. Okay.
Yeah. What should we be
watching? What should we be watching? And we're looking to you to tell us. So give us your top five.
Let's start with your gems.
Well, so for instance, I just said The Bear. Mm-hmm. I really think you should watch. If you are a fan of, you know, Masterpiece Mystery, the final season of Endeavor is coming on Sunday, June 18th. And that's been a great show. You can watch this on the that's a Masterpiece Mystery classic at this point. And that's going to be Sunday, June 18th at 9 p.m. I'm looking forward to the new season of Star Trek Strange New World. If you're a Star Trek fan, this is one of those shows. There have been many new Star Trek shows. And, you know, I've gotten behind early versions of a lot of them. The final season of Picard, I think, has been particularly excellent. But Star Trek Strange New World, that follows the adventures of Captain Christopher Pike before Kirk. And Anson Mount stars as Captain Pike. He's wonderful. It very much follows the classic model of the, you know, the mission of the week. So that's wonderful. We have coming up in July, Justified City Primeval.
That's I've never be heard on of FX. This.
These are all new to me, yes.
Yeah.
Sure, so taking Justified,
notes. Oh, my goodness. Justified was one of my favorite shows, you know, from about a decade ago. It had starred Timothy Oliphant as Raylan Givens. And so he was this modern marshal, but also, you know, wears a cowboy hat. If you talk about writing, terrific writing in this show. So this returns with him in as Raylan Givens. He's coming back. You know, it's maintaining who he is now. He now has a child. And so he's moving into a different city. So it's an expansion and a continuation of that world. And it was, by the way, he's an Elmore Leonard character, if that gives you some indication of the writing and humor. So I'm really looking forward to that. And again, that's Tuesday, July 18th. It's going to be on FX. And then further into August, we have the return of Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, I love
Steve
that
Martin,
show. Yeah.
Martin Short, Selena Gomez.
I think we have actually
Paul
have a
Rudd's
clip. I think we have a clip on that one we'd love to play. This is Oliver Short. Oliver, Martin Short, Mabel, played by Selena Gomez, and Charles, played by Steve Martin. They investigate a murder in the building. They become suspicious of Tina Fey's character, Cinda Canning, in this clip we're about to play. Season 3, as you mentioned, set to premiere August 8th. Let's roll that clip.
We need to unravel Cinda like a... what's the thing that unravels? No, we just need to find the thing that unravels Cinda so she slips up and reveals herself as a killer.
Oh, that's good.
What's the one thing we know drives Cinda crazy?
A sweater.
A sweater drives Cinda crazy?
No. A sweater unravels, dear. Try to keep up.
Okay.
I love
so it. What makes this show... We only have about a minute, but what makes this show so great, Melody?
Oh, I mean, Steve Martin and Martin Short have performed together for quite some time. So their chemistry is already quite established. But there's something wonderful about the way that they incorporate Selena Gomez into their act as performers. The writing really caters to them. And these are very sweet mysteries that are, in a way, very much in the style of Agatha Christie, but also incorporating, you know, these their comedic timing between the three of them is just impeccable. It's one of my favorite things, and it's a strange thing to have. It's very close to what I'd say is a cozy mystery, but it is its own thing. So yeah, it's all about their chemistry and, you know, the coziness of their mysteries, which is a strange thing to say about a murder investigation.
And they also kind of make fun of our industry a little bit.
Us
in the podcasting radio world. Mm-hmm. And it is very funny to me when they nail our eccentricities and our tics.
Yes.
And some of the tracking. Anyways, that's a great show. I encourage you to check out that show and all of other Melanie's picks.
Sure.
Melanie McFarlane, television critic for Salon and president of the Television Critics Association. Thank you so much for joining us on Studio 2 and fighting through those technical difficulties. We really do appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yes, and coming up is Trivia Thursday. Avi has this week's trivia question. I wonder what it'll be. We shall see.
It's a mystery.
Little mystery there.
Welcome back to Studio 2, winding down the week with another Trivia Thursday. I am one of your two quiz masters, Avi Wolfman Arendt.
And I am the notorious CTG. That is the cherry T, Greg. I'll never tell you what the T stands for.
I'm going to get it out of you someday.
Maybe, but maybe not. So I'm excited about trivia. Today we have Faye from Northern Liberties on the line. Welcome to Studio 2, Faye.
Hey there. How you doing?
We're good. We're great. And so I got to ask you, since we were talking to a TV critic, what is your guilty pleasure TV show?
Oh, my.
Oh, there's so many that could shame me right now. But I think my favorite guilty pleasure is The Circle. It's on Netflix, and it's a reality show TV program, which kind of strangely recreates a social network popularity contest. And it is brilliant.
I think I have heard of this. Ooh. I've heard it's wild. Okay.
Faye just added to my must-see TV. Thank you.
So, Faye, here are the stakes. If you get this trivia question right and it's multiple choice, I want to point out it's multiple choice, you get a branded Studio 2 tote bag that you can proudly tote around wherever you go. Okay, so those are the stakes. I love Faye already. So we talked about television a lot this hour, and we have a Philadelphia-themed TV question for you. Remember to listen to all four choices, okay?
Okay.
This 1990s coming-of-age sitcom was set in the Philadelphia area. Are we talking about A, Boy Meets World, B, The Wonder Years, C, My So-Called Life, or D, Clarissa Explains It All? And if you need anything repeated, let me know.
All right. So I was not in the United States in the 1990s.
Whoops.
So I did watch The Wonder Years, and I don't think it was that, because that came to the UK. I'm going to take a wild guess here.
Go for it.
I'm going to go for Clarissa Explains It All.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. Obviously, we don't know who the contestants are going to be. I feel really bad that we picked an era in which you were not in the United States. The answer is Boy Meets World.
That would be my next answer.
Honestly, it is a fun show to go back and watch because the main characters are always wearing like 1990s era Philly sports paraphernalia, which is like my favorite era of sports paraphernalia. So it's worth a watch just for that. It is Boy Meets World. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. You know what I'm going to do this weekend? I'm going to binge watch it all just for you.
Thank you for that.
A great contestant, by the way.
Excellent contestant. And I love your accent. And here's a fun fact, because that's what we do here on Studio 2. Boy Meets World was played by actor.
The main character
was played by actor Ben Savage. What is he up to today? Well, earlier this year, he's announced he's running for Congress in California. So there you go. He's Boy Meets World
meets
actor
Congress.
Turned, you know, potentially Congress. There you go.
He is actually trying to
win.
He is trying to win the seat vacated by Adam Schiff, who is running for U.S. Senate. So it's actually a pretty important district in California. I suppose best of luck, Ben Savage, and best of luck to you, Faye, from Northern Liberties. We really do appreciate the time we spent with you on this Thursday.
Cheers very much. Thank you for having me.
All right. So we have Tanya Pendleton with things to do for the weekend.
Let's get to it.
All right.
Music and Pride are the highlights of this weekend in Philadelphia. It's Pride Month, and that means there's a Pride March and Festival. Philly Pride 365 happens on Sunday, and its theme is Love, Light, and Liberation. It starts at 6th and Walnut at 10:30 a.m. and ends in the Gayborhood at 13th and Locust Streets. Before the march, there will be music, speeches, and the presentation of the city's longest ever Pride flag, which measures over 200 feet. Festival includes a decompression space, a Kiki Alley celebration space, accommodations for the disabled, and a sober zone. Community organizations will also be on site. We'll have more info on Pride events on our website, whyy.org/things to do. If you need something to wear to all the Pride activities this month, head to the Philly Vintage Flea. It's at the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center in Oaks. It goes from noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. You could also wear your new threads to Philly Beer Week. It starts on Friday, going through June 11th, with an array of events throughout the city and the suburbs. They include a murder mystery dinner, an art show, and a yappy hour that you can bring your dog to. They can't drink, though. Strictly 21 and over. That's for you, not the dog. But they will get some treats. We move from vintage clothing to a vintage block for Saturday's Fete on the Alley.
Alfred's Alley on 2nd Street north of Arch is literally an 18th century street, not merely because of the stone cobbling, but because its houses are not restorations. They have been in continuous use as residences since colonial times.
This is the annual event where the residents of Alfred's Alley open their doors to the curious to showcase the work they've done in their homes. It's been happening for 89 years. If you wonder why they do it, it's the annual fundraiser for this historic street. It is a ticketed event, and there are two entry times, 1 and 3 p.m. After seeing those historic homes, you may be inspired to upgrade your own. The Rittenhouse Square Fine Arts Show is happening around the square from Friday through Sunday. This, too, is a long-standing event that's been going on for 96 years. 145 artists in multiple disciplines will showcase their wares in what becomes an outdoor art gallery. Bring those credit cards. Remember, it's called the Fine Art Festival, and that means you better find some bucks to purchase some art. Here's the good news. Ed Sheeran is in town, and he's doing two shows, one an intimate theater show on Friday and another on Saturday at Lincoln Financial Field.
And even though I know this fire brings me pain, even so, and just the same, make it rain.
The bad news, both the shows are sold out. But you may get lucky and find tickets via resellers, and the prices I've seen are surprisingly not bad. But as always, in dealing with resellers, be cautious. There are still tickets to see Joan Osborne. The folk blues pop singer-songwriter is heading to Upper Marion Township Park for Concerts Under the Stars on Sunday night.
It's been going around. Just shake your hips. Do the hip shake, baby.
The concert series is now in its 37th year. Joan takes the stage at 6 p.m. We've saved the best for last. The Roots Picnic is back. We're too excited at this year's lineup, which includes Ari Lennox, Lucky Day, Little Uzi Vert, Estate Property Reunion, Black Thought, The Isley Brothers, Eve, Saucy Santana, and many more. Usher is one of the night's headliners, along with Miss Lauryn Hill. Don't forget that Miss, it's important. The picnic is Saturday and Sunday at the Mann Music Center in Fairmount Park.
Peace up, A-Town.
Things to do? We've got to go, because we don't have our outfit yet. Should we wear leather, lace, designer, or vintage? I don't know, so we've got some shopping to do. I'm Tanya Pendleton, and we'll be back next Thursday for another edition of Things to Do. We invite you to our website, whyy.org/things to do, where you can find out where to see some private gardens not usually open to the public in Society Hill and Mount Airy, and why you should head to Delaware this weekend if you're a country music fan. Whatever you choose to do, have a great weekend, everyone. Usher, take it away.
Karaoke, apparently.
I know. Well, I'm a huge Usher fan. I'm also a 1990s, early 2000s Lauryn Hill fan, but I will not be at the Roots Picnic.
I'm sorry about that.
But shout out, because this is going to be a great weekend. It kicks off tonight with, you know, Dave Chappelle at Wells Fargo. So there you go. Well, that is the end of our show.
Our show's over, yeah.
I know. Head on over to whyy.org/studio2 and follow WHYY on Twitter. We use the hashtag Studio2.
Quickly, our producers are Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Our engineer is Al Banks. WHYY's audio general manager is Joan Isabella. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, she's Cherry Gregg. I am Avi Wolfman-Arendt.